We're doing the Ma'aral. We're up to page Yud Dalet, the second column in the standard editions, page Lamed Vav in the Hartman editions. And the Ma'aral had been explaining that when we say that something is an asmachta, that means that although the Torah indicates the concept, the Torah doesn't obligate the mitzvah. And our sages drew from the pasuk the concept, which they later instituted as a rabbinic mitzvah. So asmachta is really very powerful. It shows us that the concept was already there. Hashem implanted within the Torah a concept with potential for us at the proper time to institute it as obligatory. And he gave one example from washing netilas yadayim, and he showed how the pasuk really shows you the concept of the hands being more prone to tumah. And then he quoted the isur of bishul akum, that we're not allowed to eat food that was cooked by a non-Jew. And the Talmud quotes a pasuk that when the Jews were passing Edomite territory, they said, we'll buy food from you, and we'll buy water from you, and we'll drink it. And the sages said, just as water is something that's edible, drinkable, without being cooked, so too the food that they would have purchased and eaten from the non-Jews, the Edomites, had to be food that was edible without being cooked. So the Talmud says, it doesn't say that in the pasuk, but it's an asmachta. So the Maral says like this, v'kra ucha demilta kamau. What the pasuk was telling us is the natural order of things. She'umashi nivdelet mu'uma acheret. When you have a nation, that's a nation unto itself. We weren't coming to marry with the Edomites. We weren't coming to unify with them. Quite the contrary, we wanted to maintain our sovereignty and our identity. Kmo she'Yisrael nivdalim mikol ha'umot. And we, the people of Israel, have a responsibility to remain separate, to maintain our uniqueness. And derech liyot lehem chibur v'shituv im ha'uma she'nivdelet mimena. And so therefore, it's logical that the way of the world is that if you want to stay separate, then you're not going to connect with that nation. So they'll only buy from one another something that hasn't changed. You're not going to buy his homemade cookies. If I'm my own people, so I might buy water from you. I might buy potatoes from you. I'm not gonna buy your potato kugel if we're our own people. That's why the pasuk mentions that they said to the Edomites, we'll buy water from you. That's something that you didn't invest anything in it. It's not personal. I'm not connecting with you when I buy water from you. And so when the Torah then says, and we'll buy food from you, it's talking about food that's like the water. Now obviously the Torah is not telling us a mitzvah here. The Torah is not telling you, don't buy cooked food from a non-Jew. The Torah is telling you the conversation that the people of Israel had with the Edomites. Mikol makom lamdu, but nonetheless, our sages understood from this verse shederech ha'uma liyot nivdelet min acheret v'tikun ha'ochel, that this is one of the ways that we maintain our uniqueness when it comes to the food. What about what? So pasakum, the idea is that it's not your wife making bread for me. You know, it's the baker making it for the whole town. So there's nothing personal about that. That was exactly the idea. And so this pasuk became the source for this rabbinic prohibition. It is the rabbis that prohibited us from buying food that was cooked by a non-Jew. And the idea was to keep us separate, to keep us with our own identity. And the rabbi specifically said, don't buy food that requires human preparation. Because the food is really the human soul. Food affects what type of person you are. And so food is a point of connection with people.
So food can elevate you or bring you down.
That's true. Because the food is what really gives us life. And this nation has to be separate from the other nations. So when you have food that was created by God and you sell that to me, There isn't such a connection. But when you're going to take food that you manufactured, it wasn't edible before you did something to it. So then, food that was made al yedei echad me'uma acheret, that was prepared by someone from another nation, yesh li'Yisrael la'achik oto. So an Israelite should really distance himself from that. Achal shu'ochel mekeim ha'adam atzmo. He's giving us a deeper insight. He's saying, you live off of the food you eat. If you sold me food that God made, okay. If you sold me food that you made, food that I couldn't eat what God made, so then you're giving me life. I'm connecting to you because I'm eating the kugel you made. I couldn't eat the potatoes raw. If they didn't make the food, so then it's not their food. I could buy potatoes from them because they didn't make the potatoes into food. They didn't make it edible. But once they made it into food, so then Israel should distance themselves from it. And if they don't, then they become one. They become connected. The Maharal is telling us something phenomenal. Aside from the insight he's giving us, he's also taking the Gezerah of Chazal and he's taking it one step closer. Meaning, when we read the Gemara says they declared, don't buy their cooked food because that'll bring you close and then your son might end up marrying his daughter. It seems like the prohibition of buying their cooked food is preemptive to the problem of connecting with them. Not that the cooked food itself connects, but that the cooked food could lead to connection. The Maharal is taking it one step back. He says, no, the food itself is a problem. And this goes back to the concept that the Maharal is stressing, that the Torah is teaching me a concept. So then if it's a biblical concept, it's not a concept of a gezerah. The gezerah has to have a life of its own. It's not just about separating, it's about the food itself being a connection. You guys with me? So he says, so here I've just shown you that when we say the pasuk is an asmachta, it doesn't just mean, oh, it's a nice allusion. It means there's really great support from the verse to this concept. But the pasuk was talking about the way of the world, the way Israel behaved when they passed the Edomites. It's not commanding you not to buy their food. It's telling you what Israel did when they passed by. So this is the support for the rabbinic prohibition of buying food cooked by non-Jews, because that's what's going to ultimately connect us with them. Yeah?
How can you reconcile then the coolness in the Ashkenazic world with regard to this? For example, it's not true in the Sephardic world. In the Ashkenazic world, as I recall one of the before, throwing a twig on the fire. That's basically next to nothing. I mean, based upon this, they shouldn't be doing those kind of
things. But that's keeping the fire going, not starting.
So
all you do is turn it up and down, and that's all it is adding to the fire. That's right. Sufficient to take it out of Bishalach. But how do you reconcile around that?
Oh, you're saying so a goy starts.
I'll tell you the truth. You're 100% right.
Sufficient according to the Ashkenazim. Sparta, they want something more substantial for the Machaber.
It's true. The question is a good question. I could answer it, but I think that after my answer, your question is better than my answer. So if you want, I'll tell you an answer. But I'd rather leave it as a question.
I just wonder if it's the same issue with Pasachim, because with Pasachim, the problem was you had to get baked goods from the bakers. Yeah, that was too difficult to do that. Same thing with Bishalachim, it was too difficult to do in that situation.
So we could say, let's take a scenario. Okay? My neighbor Susan, she and her husband Christopher, they're going to make a fantastic cake. Kosher ingredients and everything. They buy it at my supermarket. I know what goes. They buy all their food at my supermarket. So they buy the eggs by me. They buy the flour by me. They buy the butter by me. They buy the pans by me. And they're even going to come to my house because they're out of gas. They're going to come and bake by me. So I see everything that goes into it. So Susan comes into my house and she borrows a tin from my wife. And she says, you know what? You guys are so nice. You give us discounts at your store. You let us use your oven. I'm going to bake a cake for you too, man. Okay? I'm going to make a double batter and put some by you.
Is so, in your oven that's kosher?
Yeah. So Susan starts working really hard. She smears the butter on the tin. She starts mixing, beating the eggs, separating the eggs, beating the eggs, putting in the flour, putting in the sugar. And she's starting to make a fantastic cake. Let's take scenario number one. She works her head off making two cakes. And then she comes that night and says, you guys are so nice. We want to show our appreciation. And here's a fantastic cake we made for you. In that scenario, what I'm getting from Susan is something that's 100% Susan in that cake. And Chazal said, if you're going to get 100% Susan in the cake, then Susan's little daughter, Betsy, well, your little son Chaim and Betsy, who knows? You know, you start getting too friendly. It's not the way it should be. Let's take scenario number two. Susan is cooking and baking and everything, but she's using my oven. I'm turning on the fire. So when I get the cake from Susan, I know, okay, it's 80% Susan, but it's 20% me. It's my oven. It's my fire. So if Susan did everything, she paid for the gas, it's all hers, so then it's 100% Susan. But if Susan didn't do everything, so then our connection is already diminished. It's not 100% Susan. So when our sages made the prohibition, they said if there's a break, if there's somewhere in there where you stuck your hand in, so that's enough. Again, like I said, I think the question is better than the answer. Because at the end of the day, you have to really come back to the real answer, which is the institution is rabbinic.
The difference is minuscule. It's almost
infinitesimal. I agree. But if you go back, so here's where you have to really, so then you're starting to peel off what the Maharal said. You say, wait a second. Really, the rabbis instituted it. Once they instituted it, so they treated it the way we treat law. Meaning, by the law, if they didn't read you your Miranda rights, the fact that you started bawling and confessing and saying, I did it and I shouldn't have done it. We say, yeah, but they didn't read you your rights. So, okay, you're off the hook. But wait a second, we didn't even ask him for the confession. He was bawling. Okay, but you have to read him his rights, right? On a minuscule thing, when it comes to the law, we throw out a case. So the same thing in rabbinic institutions. The rabbis made a framework, and they said, within this framework, if you have an exception, so then you can break out of the framework, so to speak. We give you the tools to have the leniencies. So one of the tools we say is, if it's not all his doing, you could get out of it. So then you come back and you say, so wait a second, so what did you just tell me? If the whole concept is he did it, if he did it, it's my life through him, connection. So then what are you telling me that the smallest thing makes a difference? What difference does it make? So then you have to start modifying the Maharal. And you have to say, okay, the Torah taught me the concept, that food connects. Once the Torah taught me the concept, it's still a rabbinic institution. If it's a rabbinic institution, then it's limited to their institution. They can do it as they see fit. Either Torah gave them the concept, but the Torah also gave them the power to institute it in their legal system. And that being the case, they could impose their leniencies. You with me? So that's what I'm saying. You're like peeling off the Maharal a little bit. Because you're saying, yeah, the concept was there. And yeah, the concept is true. But at the end of the day, it's still rabbinic. And if it's still rabbinic, then they could define it. And if they're defining it, then they could stick in leniencies. So you'll tell me, if the concept's true, why are they sticking in leniencies? So that goes back to what you were saying. It's about life. If they're making institutions, then they're going to give us the ways out. And if the Torah doesn't obligate us to the concept, so then I have room to institute it, but I'm not going to give it the weight of a D'oraisa. If it were a D'oraisa, you're right. I couldn't get away with that. I'm saying that's where you end off. If I'm gonna, you end off peeling off a lot of the Maharal by saying it that way. But okay, yeah, you're right. Yeah. Fine. Yes. I agree.
Sorry.
I'll tell you. I have a question. Is my job here to promote Maharal, or is my job here to balance Maharal? So originally I felt I got to promote, but if you're questioning, so I have to go with the bottom line. You're right. Okay.
In Rahm Machshir for a camp in the Poconos, I see this. I mean, frankly, there's very little we have to do to make it come out of Pishalaka.
Yeah. Okay, we have another 5 minutes. Shall we? Next example, which is relevant even here in Israel this year, and in Chutz Laaretz even more. Ubeperek Beta Beitza, the Talmud tells us in the second chapter of Tractate Beitza, the rabbis instituted that if Yom Tov falls out on a Thursday, Friday, and you want to cook for Shabbos, you have to make a special thing called an Eruv Tavshil, and you set aside something cooked and something baked before Yom Tov, and you say, this is going to permit me to cook and bake from Yom Tov to Shabbos. Technically, okay, we have to introduce this with a lot of introductions. Okay. Biblically, I'm prohibited from cooking on Yom Tov for the sake of Shabbos. Biblically. But I'm only prohibited from cooking in a scenario where it would only be for Shabbos. Meaning, let's say I get up Yom Tov morning. So we know that on Yom Tov I'm allowed to cook. I'm going to make 50 scrambled eggs. Why am I making 50 scrambled eggs? Because tonight I'm going to have the whole class from Machon Meir over. Tonight on Shabbos, after Yom Tov, I'm going to have the whole class over. So you'll tell me, are you allowed to do that on Yom Tov to prepare for Shabbos? So the answer is, biblically, you are allowed. Because technically, they might show up this morning and say, we just came by for breakfast. I don't expect them to do that. That's true. But because right now, there's still ample time for people to surprise me, so when I'm cooking it on Yom Tov, the fact that it could potentially be for a Yom Tov meal permits me biblically to cook it on Yom Tov for Shabbos. What would happen if I'm going to bake these, I'm going to do 50 scrambled eggs 5 minutes before Yom Tov's out? So there's no chance all these guys are going to show up now and have these scrambled eggs. That's biblically prohibited on Yom Tov. And then an Erev Tavshilin wouldn't help me. The rabbis didn't come to permit that which is biblically prohibited. So what did the rabbis come to do? The rabbis said, if we're going to let you just cook from Yom Tov to Shabbos, then you might say, oh, I'll still cook for Shabbos. And if I could cook for Shabbos, then I could cook for weekdays too. Or you might forget all about Shabbos and eat up all your yummy food and not have any food left for Shabbos. We want you, on the one hand, to realize that Yom Tov is severe, that you can't just cook from Yom Tov to Shabbos. We want you, and then you'll also realize, obviously, you can't cook for a weekday. And we want you to remember Shabbos so you don't end up eating all the foods. So these are two opinions in the Gemara. Which one did they institute it for? So the rabbi said, if you want to cook from Yom Tov to Shabbos, before Yom Tov settles in, you have to prepare something. You have to make an Eruv Tavshilin, in which you declare, through this I will prepare from Yom Tov to Shabbos. And this achieves two purposes. Machlokas, which one is the point? Is it so that I won't get confused? I won't say, well, if I could cook from Yom Tov to Shabbos, I could cook for weekdays too. And then one would end up doing a biblical prohibition. You see, no, you can't cook from, even from Yom Tov to Shabbos requires special preparation. Or the idea was that people might end up eating all their food on Yom Tov and have nothing left in honor of Shabbos. So the rabbi said, before Yom Tov starts, I want you to start doing something for Shabbos so that you'll already have Shabbos on your mind before Yom Tov starts and you'll end up saving some good food for Shabbos too. Whatever it is, the rabbis instituted this rabbinic institution that in order for us to cook from Yom Tov to Shabbos, we must do an Eruv Tavshilin, as we explained. And the Talmud over there says, where do we get this concept from? The Kamal Sham, so the Talmud says over there, Dichtiv, bake whatever you want to bake, cook whatever you want to cook. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Mikan Shenofin, Elanafui, Ven Mevashlin, Elanambushan. The Torah tells you, cook whatever you want to cook. It means to say, if you've already started cooking, so cook. If you've already started baking, then bake. But otherwise, don't cook and bake on Yom Tov. You have to have started cooking and baking if you want to continue cooking and baking on Yom Tov for Shabbos. Mikan Eruv Tavshilin min HaTorah ad kan. So Rabbi Elazar says in the Gemara, this is the source for Eruv Tavshilin in the Torah. Uviyu ze gam ken, ki pshat ha-katuv, ma shekafal ha-lashonet, asher tofu eifu, velo katav eifu hayom bashlu hayom. So the pshat over here again is that the Pasuk used a double Lashon. It referred to it twice. It said, that which you will bake, you can bake. That which you will cook, you can cook. Why didn't it just say, bake today, cook today, because tomorrow is Shabbos and you won't be able to cook and bake. Why did it say whatever you want to bake, bake today? Whatever you want to cook, cook today, because tomorrow is Shabbos. Why does it say it twice? Ratzanu maret asher tutzu lefot efu kol hayom kol melechta afia. The Torah is saying anything you want to cook, anything you want to bake, bake it all today. Ve'al tomar ki natchil hayom ba'afia v'im yesh davar shelo nefe yafe lemachar. And don't tell yourself, you know what, I'll start baking today. Whatever I don't finish today, I'll finish tomorrow on Shabbos. In other words, the Torah says, no, you can't do that. But whatever you want to bake, you get it done today on Friday. Because tomorrow you won't be able to bake. Even if you already started today, you're not going to finish it tomorrow on Shabbos. So here our sages looked into this pasuk and they inferred, they understood that there's a difference between starting to bake and finishing to bake. And the Torah was saying, don't start your baking and cooking on Friday and finish your baking and cooking on Shabbos, because on Shabbos I'm not going to let you. But our sages said, okay, so the Torah is telling you that about Shabbos. But there's another day where I'm going to tell you, if you started baking and cooking before that day, you can continue baking and cooking, and that's Yom Tov. So if you start cooking or baking before Yom Tov, you may continue baking and cooking in honor of Shabbos, even though Yom Tov is also a day of rest. And we'll pick up here, Bezachin after Alvit.